It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 381 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. It's another great indie comic doubleheader weekend this week as I talk with Marvin Nguyen from The Edge and Zane Shenwari from The Elemental Balance. Both have important events happening this weekend, so please be sure to support them. First up, Marvin Nguyen is at Three Rivers Comic Con in Pittsburgh, where he's talking about The Edge, which is a great superhero book. People always say that they've seen everything they can with superheroes. I don't think so, and Marvin proves that to be incorrect. He's got several issues of The Edge out, and he tells us how to get them, as well as what's coming in the near future. One word of warning, my microphone had technical difficulties when I was talking to Marvin. So his voice comes out great, but mine, you hear a little white noise behind it because I had to up the volume so much. Then everything wraps up with Zane Shenwari, who I met at Fan Expo Dallas recently. I really enjoy his book, The Elemental Balance, and he's got more coming as well. I got to read issue number 4, which I think is one of his best, and he talks about issue 5, which is coming before too long. And he's got a Kickstarter going that deserves your support, so please go look for The Elemental Balance, chapter 4, Fired Up, and chapter is spelled C-H on Kickstarter. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Marvin Nguyen, the creator behind The Edge from Short Fuse Comics, among other things. How you doing, Marvin?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. Good night here in Pittsburgh. Pretty warm, but I'll take the warmth over the snow and the cold that we had a couple months ago.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. I used to live up in northeastern Pennsylvania. I lived in Scranton. And cold stuff. Cold stuff. So, well, I see you're going to be at Three Rivers Convention. When this posts, we'll be up there in Pennsylvania. So if anybody's at Three Rivers Convention, be sure to look Marvin up. Is the booth in your name, or what's it under?
We're sharing a booth with Heroenberg. It's booth 107.
Okay.
So they're going to be doing some. They do a episodic superheroing show that's based in Pittsburgh, and they're going to have a whole room at the con showing episodes from the show. So we'll be right outside that room.
Oh, cool. Very cool. I've never been to that convention.
I was there 2 years ago when it used to be at Century 3 Mall. Mm-hmm. And now they've moved down to the waterfront in the old Macy's building. So much more space than it was before. So they're expecting it to be huge this year. I think they've tripled the attendance from last year.
Wow. Very good, because of course this will post on Sunday morning, so this is your chance. If you get a chance to go over to there and check out Marvin and his good stuff, that'll be good. Now, you'll have paper copies there, right?
Yes, we'll have 8 issues of The Edge and maybe a special surprise at the show. Hmm. Plenty of copies for everyone that comes in. We'll also have the Mystic mini statue available.
Ooh.
That seems to be a big seller for people. They seem to enjoy having a little mini statue of Mystic sitting on their desk at work, or just following them around and doing seeing what they're doing.
Cool, because I have Hawkman on my desk looking at me all the time, so he makes sure I do ask the right questions and stuff. So, well, why don't we dive in, because that you're bringing up something I want to talk about what the book's about before we get into the individual characters. So, okay. Why don't we talk about what is The Edge?
For an overview of the book, it's pretty much a book that tries to separate revenge from redemption. So we've got a character, Revenant, who is a kind of a super soldier type character that kind of gets tired of being handled. So he escapes, heads out into the world, and his handlers pretty much form a team to stop him. They have no idea what his motivations are. They don't know what he was what he's going to do. So they want to try to shut him down before he can cause any damage.
Hmm. Okay. Now I always like to ask these things. Why is it called the Edge?
The Edge is the drug. So there's a drug that has the ability to unlock powers in people. The good side is it gives you these amazing powers. The bad sides are you got no control over them, and they're slowly killing them.
Hmm. It was for the book Enhanced Covert Black Ops Unit, and I was trying to figure out how that fit in the word edge, but luckily I don't have to figure that out because you explained what it is, so that's good. So I'm kind of fascinated. You know, a lot of the times we see superheroes being made and they get to be turned into teen models or into, you know, they live forever. You know, Superman supposedly lives for centuries, you know, on Earth and stuff. So I'm kind of interested that you went a different direction with that. What was it about going that direction that appealed to you?
I think it's more of the overpopulation and looking at it from my perspective. I am a diabetic and I need insulin to pretty much live. If I don't take it, I'm going to slowly degenerate, I'll say is one of the word I'll use. So it comes a lot from my experience as someone who has to take a medication every day.
Mm-hmm.
So these characters don't know that it's pretty much killing them. And one of them the taglines is that the infection spreads. So this thing it's not a gift, it's a curse.
Mm.
If you get it, you don't want it. You want to get rid of it, and they can't get rid of it.
Okay. It's interesting. The book starts out, number one, starts out like in an Arctic area, and that must be where their home base is.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on? That's where we first meet the Revenant. We also meet the guy that's behind all this stuff. Is it Mr. Tartable?
Yes.
He's behind all these good things. So it's really an interesting thing. I like the fact that you do things in the Arctic, or is it Arctic or Antarctic where that is? I always forget.
It's the Arctic area. We really don't say where it is. It's one of those anywhere where it's cold type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Really good, because it's interesting to. I have to say too, one of the great things about this is that it's an action oriented comic. So often these comics that come out and there's lots of talking going on. You don't have quite so much talking. You have a lot more activity happening, and I like action in a comic book. So was that intentional? Did you go to this with an idea that you wanted to do something action-oriented?
Well, the one thing when I try to sell the book to people, I sell it as a throwback to 90s comics. Your 90s X-Men, your Image, Wildcats, your Youngbloods, your books of that nature, where I'm pretty much letting the art tell the story more than having the characters pop in and try to explain things that are going on. When Mark's doing the art, we're putting a lot of visual cues in the pages to not say the character have to say point at something and explain to the reader what it is.
Mm-hmm. I got to point out that you have a great Facebook page for this, and one of the great things about it is you have a picture that has 45 characters from the Edge, which is just something I don't know many comics that can support 45 characters or have the ability to do it, but you do a really good job with it. And I love this drawing because it literally goes 1 to 45 and shows their pictures. The funny thing is when I go on Facebook, it's forever trying to make me put a name in on these pictures. And I'm always going, no, that's up for you. That's not for me to do. So I get a huge kick out of it. So 45 characters. Did you start out with a cast that big, or did you develop them as they went along? Did the story just demand it? How did you do that?
I think the story led its way into having that large of a cast. Back before there was an Edge, when I was crafting this whole entire story, I had more characters than that. The problem was that they didn't really fit a mold. And I think I fell backwards into more of the, and not a character, but a power. So we created a power and then gave it to a character. And that really doesn't work because the character has no characterization. They've got no depth. If there's a power, some guy just comes in, shoots all over the place. You really don't care about why he's shooting beams all over the place. And with these, this group of characters, and we may have a few other more that didn't make it onto that image, but each one of them has some depth to them. There's a reason why they're there. There's a reason why they do the things they do or the things they don't do. We have a character on there, and character 42, Sigma, mm-hmm. who we haven't introduced yet, but he's a very interesting backstory in that he's from a dying Earth, and he didn't want to fight anymore. He was tired of it. He was tired of all these the villains coming to his city, wrecking the whole entire city, and then the people in the city blaming him. So he just said, okay, I quit. I give up. I'm done fighting. I'm just going to sit down and relax and live my life.
That doesn't last too long, though. Doesn't seem like
no. No. Eventually, he gets pulled back in it, and it's a really interesting twist on how we pulled him back in. But he's coming up in later issues. You're not going to see him for a while now.
Because you've got 8 issues now that are out.
Yeah.
And do you have an idea how many issues you're going to come up with, or how long the story's going to go on?
Originally, I had the whole entire storyline tied around the Richard Tartable character, but it's expanded so much that it's probably going to go beyond. Originally, I had 25 issues set, where in issue 25, Revenant finally gets to Tartable, and they have their final showdown or final face-off.
Mm.
It's expanded beyond that now. We've gone to a point where we're thinking of taking characters off-world. We have a pretty good storyline coming up pretty soon that I'm really not going to say much about, just that it involves other indie characters outside of our characters.
Hmm.
So we've got a lot of things. It's grown so much from where I originally thought it was going to go. And just adding more characterization, adding more depth to the characters, introducing different elements into the story have expanded it so much that I don't think I can stop it on my own, is what I'll say. Wow. Someone would have to say, hey, quit it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's 8 issues so far. When did number 8 come out?
Issue 8 came out last July. Okay. Because when we joined Short Fuse, we released all 8 issues at once.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So that's how this went. Did you do it self-published before that?
Yes, before we were with Scattered Comics, and before that we were self-publishing. We self-published up to issue 4, I believe, before. Then we joined Scattered, and I think we did up to issue 6 with Scattered, and then with Short Fuse, we just reprinted all the issues.
That makes sense. Are you going to put trades out, or are you going to keep with single issues?
There is a trade for the first 4 issues. It's on Amazon.
Mm.
There's going to be a trade for issues 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, which will... Issue 9 closes out the Reign of Chaos storyline before we start, before issue 10 comes out, and I start a new arc called God's Thunder.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because what happened was I ran into you on Facebook, and you made issue 1 available to me, and I liked it so much I went ahead and ordered the digital versions of 2 through 8, and I read them, and I liked them real well. I enjoy the action, and I enjoy the characters, and you know, I think it really hangs together really nicely. And of course, now I got to know what happens next. That's why I'm asking about 8. Is since you got 8 going, you've got all these good plans. Do you know when you're going to put number 9 out?
I'm going to keep that on a little back burner for just a couple more weeks. We should be having an announcement coming up maybe next week about issue 9.
Okay, so will it be after the convention or during the convention?
That's the back burner part.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
So, well, let's get to that before we go on any further. I mentioned the Facebook group. Is that the main area to be able to follow your news and information? You have a website, right?
The website right now is pointing to the Facebook page. I have plans to actually flesh out the whole entire website pretty soon, maybe after the summer. I'll have time to sit down and put that back together again. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram. So any of those places where you can find me, I'm there chatting up comics or chatting up the edge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, it's on Facebook. I think it's the.edge.comic, if I remember correctly. I think
correct.
It comes in. So is it that way when you go on the Twitter and you go on the Instagram?
Twitter is at Marvin Nguyen, and Instagram is at the.edge.comic.
Okay, so you're in good places like that, too. So that's a good thing. Now, talk about, because you've been working at this for quite a while now. When did this actually begin? I mean, what were the origins of The Edge? Where did you start doing it?
We started in 2012 was our official launch of issue 1. And it said that there were times back before that where you had a few false launches and a few oh, we're going to get the book out now, and then it's pull it back. And it wasn't until I met Mark, the artist, that we really got things going. I mean, I think he was able to encompass everything that I was writing down and bring that stuff to life. Most of the time I give him very, very little descriptions about, oh, I want, this is what we want the scene to look like. And then I jump into the dialogue and he just explodes onto amazing, more than what I gave him to work with. He's like the perfect partner to work on this book. A lot of the time he'll readapt the page, he'll see something that I don't see. And it just works so perfectly together between us.
See, I often say that sometimes an artist will bring something to a writer that the writer may never have considered, and all of a sudden you look at the artwork and you go, oh, wait a minute, that means this could go this way, which is something that you didn't think of originally.
And that gives me opportunities sometimes to go back and rewrite the dialogue saying, oh, you did this. Now I can have the person say this instead of what they were originally going to say.
Okay. So that's good. Thank you with those good things. So, I'm just interested in the characters. I don't want to spend too long because you've got so many. Which characters do you think that if somebody was coming to the Edge for the first time, would you... I mean, you mentioned Revenant, and that's an important character, the sort of the bad guy of the bunch, or the person against what's going on. What other characters do you think we should focus on?
I think just taking a look at issue one, we've got our what we consider our trinity, Blaine, Mystic, and Interim. They're the top three characters in the book. They're pretty much getting most of the action and everything. The other characters are pretty much they're supporting characters right now. But as the book expands, you get to get more action on with those characters. But if you're looking to jump onto the book, those three are the top three that you're going to probably want to get with. I think people love Blaine, people love Interim, and they love Mystic. Revenant is probably the fourth or third most popular character. And I actually added more scenes to the book because people love to hate him.
It's good. You know, they always say that Disney movies are made by having really good bad guys.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, if you don't have a really good bad guy, you don't feel the tension going on and stuff. But it sounds like Revenant is filling that role for you pretty well.
Right. And after issue four, he kind of the background a little bit, and we start focusing on the Chaos character. And I think people have really grown very accustomed to him. And once we get to issue nine, I hope they don't hate what I do to him or what becomes of that character.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned the three tops. Why don't you describe who they are for people so they get somewhat familiar with them?
Right. So Blaine is your prototypical gunslinger, talkie, always thinks he's right character. His ability is to create barriers around himself and others. And we found out in issue one that even though he can create a barrier around himself, it doesn't stop what's happening on the outside. So if he's in a situation where the building's on fire, he still can feel that heat. He's still going to sweat. He can still suffocate. Interim has the ability to open time portals. So it gives her the ability to see a few seconds into the future, which helps her in any situation where she's trying to fight someone. She can see what they're going to do first and either dodge that attack or stop that attack. She can also use the portals to open a transport portal to places that she's seen or something someone can describe to her so they can walk through into that area. The problem is that if she doesn't close the portals, they erode time. So what we're going to talk about in a later issue is where she's from. Her town, the village, is 24 hours ahead of the rest of the world.
Okay, got to understand how that's going to happen. That'll be an interesting discussion about that.
Right, so there's Mystic. He's the team leader. He has the ability to fire energy through his swords. The one thing we don't explain right away is that energy coming from him or is it coming from the swords themselves? One of his main features is he has scars going through both of his eyes. That was from the swords. When he picked them up, they imprinted onto him. On the hilt of the swords, you'll notice there's a specific symbol on the swords that plays very importantly into a part in issue one and will play a very important part in the books going forward.
Now, one of the things I noticed about the characters and one of the things that attracted me to the book was the diversity in the characters. You've got all kinds of different people involved, male, female, different colors and things like that involved with it. Did you go at it with the intention of providing a really well, I don't want to say just a great diverse cast?
Oh, I think it came as my mind works, is that I'm outside a lot on buses, on planes, and I see different people. So I think that when I was creating the characters, I wasn't really trying to say, well, this character should be this color, this character should be a woman. It was more of, how does this character speak to me? Like, I'm going to say this character is called this. What does that name mean to me? Is that a male or a female? And it's just a matter of how they fit into the construct of the story of, you're going to have a mix of females and males and different colors of people in situations like this, because when you're going out and you're saying that, okay, this edge is out there and it's doing what it wants to do, how does it know who to pick to give these powers to, depending on how they're exposed to it? So it's just an example of the things I see in the world that says that this is the way this should be, and how the characters seem to me as they would be.
It's really interesting because one of the things that I want to know more about is how they get chosen. You know, how do they get the edge? How does this happen? You know, I'm still not entirely clear on that, but of course, 8 issues in, you probably got a nice backstory all developed for that, but we haven't gotten to it yet.
Right. I'll just say that Revenant is the only one who has had direct contact with the edge.
Really? So the other characters have how many of them have gotten the edge besides him? None?
Not directly. So I say that Revenant was kind of exposed to it. The other characters were kind of, let's say they ingested it, or they were given it like blood transfusion or in that manner.
Oh, okay. So this is another thing as you go along, we're going to find out more about it, I imagine.
Right.
Okay, that's very good. I love a story that unfolds. I don't want to know all the cards on the table right at the beginning. I want to explore these things and discover them. So you've got some good ideas going along in these good things. It's really interesting to see how you developed all this.
Just as a quick note, there's a character that is part of Rain's group. Her name is Vol.
Mm-hmm.
Her costume is alive.
Really?
It's a living thing. Yeah.
Really? See, now that's the question that comes right to mind about this is, if the Edge didn't necessarily do that, did they have abilities before they, however they were exposed to the Edge? I mean, were these things there and the Edge enhanced it? Does that vary by the character? How did you approach that?
It's pretty much unlocked. So you say that this person has this potential to have this ability, and the Edge unlocks that ability.
Hmm. But they don't know they have it, or they do?
No, they don't.
Okay, interesting. See, that's an interesting experience, because everybody reacts probably differently to receiving the Edge and the unlocking of abilities. That's going to be really something to see how these characters unfold along those lines, because that's going to make... Maybe that's what happened to Revenant. It was that he... You know, the Edge did things that he didn't expect, or it just changed his personality and his outlook when that happened to him. I don't, don't spoil it on me. Well, that's just a conjecture on my part.
Right.
But, I think about these things all the time. In the middle of the night, I go, oh, wait a minute, the Edge did this and that and the other. Because these things, go around in my head at the middle of the nighttime. I'll be thinking about it.
Oh, that's a good thing. I like that when someone says that, I'm thinking about this when I'm not reading the book, and I'm trying to figure out these things that are going on. Then how does it fit into the book when I finally say, okay, this is how this happened? And you're like, oh, okay, I got it now.
But you have all this planned out. I mean, in your head, you've got things sort of sorted out, and you're just sort of giving it to us as the story demands it as you go forward.
Right. Right. That's the way I like to leak out stories. I don't really want everything just bundled up and say that, here, hand you the whole entire thing. I wanted to say that, give you a little bit of pieces right there, and then you try to figure out what's going on, and then try to put the puzzle together.
Yeah, I spoke with James Tynion on the Fourth one time. He was in the middle of a 52-issue miniseries about Batman, and he revealed in issue 26 who the main bad guy was. And these people, some people online just scream bloody murder. Why didn't you reveal that right in the beginning? Well, he said, well, I'm telling a story here. You know, you don't need to know who the main bad guy is sometimes right off the bat. And he kind of laughed about that, and I had to laugh too because I thought that was kind of silly. But see, with your kind of storytelling, the things I like to get pulled into the story, think about stuff like that, because it's just, I think that's the best kind of storytelling. If it's too obvious and it's too straightforward, I lose interest after a while. And I just can't help it. But is that the kind of reading that you like, prefer? Do you like to read stories that are kind of like that, where they slowly unfold as you go along reading it?
Right. I mean, that's your long form storytelling, and that's what I liked. And you know, just this past weekend, we just finished up a 22 episode run of Avengers. Mm. That was a slow burn of story and pieces, and everything just at the end, you're like, oh, this is how all this fits together. And you're saying to yourself that, how did they do this in movie form? No one was able to do this in a movie form. How do you do 22 connected movies in movie form that no one else has ever been able to do?
It's fascinating because, you know, Marvel's done things that other people like DC has been trying. You know, Warner Brothers has been trying to do it with DC. And they haven't been as successful as Marvel has been with it. They're having more success recently with individual characters. There with that. So if you were going to do a series of movies based on The Edge, would you go the Marvel route?
I mean, that's like how we would want it to go. We like to try to emulate what we've done with the comics. If we were to translate that into any animated or movie form, is that long form story. I mean, it's the most satisfying to me when you get to that end and you're like, holy crap, what did I just watch? That was amazing. It just blew my mind that we were able to get to that point and people have people say, oh yeah, this is good. I'm going to go back to the beginning and start all over again.
I was just going to say that was that your kind of storytelling makes me go back and read again. When I find out a big reveal down the line, I go, oh my gosh, wait a second. Did you set that up for that to go on and go back and read it and say, oh, there it is. There's the setup. There's how that happened. So I love that kind of stuff. I mean, I used to, 24 was a great show for that. They would build and build and build, and then we get to the end of the 24 hours and things would all culminate really well. And I got a feeling that's the way with The Edge. It's going to be something that's going to be a great joy to read and stuff. Now, as far as like picking up paper copies, you said you have them at the conventions. Do you go to a lot of conventions? How do you get people copies of this?
This will be my second convention this year. I did Still City Comic Con last month. But I'm going to start ramping up doing cons. The book is available on the Short Fuse website, on the store there. We're growing out and trying to get into more stores. So right now in Pittsburgh, we've got it at two of the Phantom of Nomadic stores and a few other stores around the city. But we're trying to expand out into stores in other cities, other states, other countries. So if there's people out there that are interested in getting the book that don't want to get it online or don't see it at a con, talk to your stores and let them know that you want to get The Edge into the store. And I'll be happy to ship books anywhere.
So how do they get in touch with you?
How do they get in touch
with you? I mean, if they want to do that, how do they contact you?
On Facebook is fine. But if you want to reach out to me through email, it's my email is marvin.wynn@gmail.com.
And that's WYNN, right?
Correct.
Yeah, because I have a penchant for misspelling people's names when it comes to email. So I want to make sure that if they're going to get a hold of you, they do it the right way and they don't get discouraged, because that'd be a good thing to do. Now, so I take it this isn't through Diamond yet?
No. We're hedging right now with how we want to distribute books. Like I said, that it's all based on need and wants of the readers. So if you go to your store and they say, oh, we're not ordering no books, it's not in Diamond, then that's a key to me to say, I need to get my book into Diamond.
So I'm just kind of fascinated because I know some people who go to cons exclusively and sell their books there, and they're able to, you know, fund costs by doing that. There's a book I always mention by the name of Yisun Shin, and the guy's name is Henri. And I just saw him this recent weekend about, he was out there selling his books at up in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And I always see him out there, you know, talking with people and getting the word out about these good things. And he doesn't go through Diamond. He's able to do it himself. And I don't know whether you want to go completely convention or if you want to you know, go digital, and maybe, you know, you can buy advertising on Facebook. There has to be good ways to get the word out about The Edge and get people, you know, interested in it and coming and buying stuff.
Right. Oh, well, I mean, that's why we like do these podcasts and do a lot of Facebook posts, a lot of Twitter posts, a lot of Instagram posts. We're trying to expand our reach and like starting like small within Pittsburgh and expanding out from there into Ohio and into New York and just trying to get people interested as possible. That's why we're doing more cons, meeting more people. It's a grind sometimes, but I mean, it's a happy grind. I mean, I wouldn't rather be doing anything else than trying to move books and try to get people interested in reading.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Now, what I got to ask is, do you, I'm just sort of curious because I'm worried about how you're going to get the word out about good things. I'm trying to think of ways that would work for you real well, because I think conventions are a great way to do it. Boy, I don't know. I guess podcasts are a good way to do it, because it gets you to a different audience every time. Like, so that's a good way to do it. But,
I send stuff out to stores all the time saying, hey, I got this book. I'll send you like some marketing material if you think your readers will be interested. I get some lines in on that one, but said that unless we can get out there and talk to people, like the more reach we have on like a Facebook or a Twitter or Instagram, that helps. The more we can get in front of people, and you know, that word of mouth, a friend tells a friend who tells a friend.
I always say that's the most effective way of advertising. No, I gotta ask, did you Kickstarter this?
No, these were all direct release. I believe we're going to do a Kickstarter for issue 10 maybe. We're batting it back and forth right now on whether on the Kickstarter.
Because Kickstarter is one way to develop a fan base.
Right.
I always tell people the story I read somewhere where Kickstarter was like, when they totaled up the number of comics that go through Kickstarter, it's like number two behind Marvel. Which always, I just fascinated when I read that. I haven't read much more about that. I don't know if that proved to be true or not, but it's, you know, there's a lot of folks who buy a lot of comics through Kickstarter.
Right.
And you develop a fan base out there for those kinds of things. Like if you're doing a lot of collected issues, you're going to do a hardcover at some point. That's a good place to do it.
So. Right. I mean, that's what I think we want to do is do one of those omnibuses where we try to collect like all the first nine issues into one big volume, have some of the behind the scenes art, some of the stuff we didn't use, some of Mark's pinups and things that I've never shown anyone, stuff like that.
Now, don't let me lead you astray, but I like hardcovers. They're more expensive to make, I know, but I love a hardcover, especially if I enjoy the story. I want it to last a while.
Right. A few people did bring that up to me and say, hey, are you going to do a hardcover? And I'm like, it's one of those things that I write down on my list of things that I want to bat around in my head and say that, is this possible? How many people are going to buy it, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, cost is going to be important. Stuff like that too. So anyway, those things good. So you got The Edge going on, and it's percolating real well. I'm sure that number nine, will, as soon as we find out the word about that, we'll have to get that out on Facebook and maybe even advertise on Facebook, I might recommend.
Yep.
So number nine, and you said you could possibly go beyond 25. Is The Edge kind of keeping you busy these days, or are there other things that you're working on?
We're mostly focused on The Edge right now. We do have two other stories that we've got on the docket. There, one is somewhat related to The Edge. The other one is a completely different story. We just want to see how far we can go with The Edge before we start doing splinter stories and things like that.
Are these in the Edge universe?
One is, the other one is not.
Okay, so it's completely in a different universe. Okay. Mm-hmm. That must be fun to go to a different, because, you know, world building is one of those things that I always admire. And I think that's one thing you've done really well, is set up a world that, you know, you're not in Metropolis, you're not in New York City, you're doing your own things, which I love. I mean, I never see enough world building to satisfy me. I like it when you develop your own universe in that sense, and you create all kinds of things going on, because I think you can do more effective storytelling that way. So that's when I see your book, You know, I love that when I see how you're developing all the things and integrating all these things together and sort of expanding things out. I like that about it because, it's one thing to put somebody in an established costume. It's another thing to develop new characters and develop new relationships and stuff. I just have to applaud you for doing what you've done because I think The Edge is one of those things that I love to read. I love to read a new universe, so I just think you're doing a great job with that.
Oh, awesome. I appreciate it. I mean, I think that my favorite thing out of all of this is that when Mark sat down to do the character designs, he hit a home run every time. There wasn't one character, except for Blaine, that we made any changes to, and that was just his hair. We immediately dumped the long hair for Blaine, and we went with the anime pointy hairstyle that I think people like. Like, people look at him like, oh, this guy's got just an amazing haircut. And like, I mean, it just came to the point is that he originally had long hair in the first issue, and the first thing we did was burn it off. Get rid of that long
hair. It's character evolution that you're doing there on some levels. You're moving the character along so they're not exactly the same. And I see, it's one thing that drives me nuts, even though I'm a big Batman fan. Batman must always be in the same place at the end of an arc that he was at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Even like with the Catwoman potential marriage and stuff like that.
Yeah, that really upset me.
I was so looking forward to him actually being married for a change. That was something we haven't seen in decades of storytelling, but then it just didn't happen. And I was, like you, I was kind of disappointed. I was like, gosh, I'd like to have seen that. You know, it would have been a fun thing to do. But see, what you're doing is like, it's fun to watch characters change and develop and move along. And even changing somebody's hair indicates a change. And I like that. I like to pay attention.
And one of the other things, when we did the costume change up and we took interim and we put a weight on her hair to keep her hair from bouncing around. So if she's in a fight, no one, they can't grab her hair and use it as a weapon.
Mm-hmm. Like capes. People always write.
Yeah. No capes.
No capes like in The Incredibles. No capes and the stuff. Now, I do have to ask, you mentioned earlier about the fact that there was like a mini statue or a mini figure of Mystic. Mm-hmm. How do you get that? I mean, do you have to see you at a convention in order to get one of those?
Yeah, well, if someone is interested in one, they can email me to get one. But if you're at a convention, that'd probably be the best way to get it. We plan to get that up on the Short Fuse store hopefully soon. But yeah, if you're interested in one right now, you can email me about it, or if you're at a convention, you can pick one up there.
Oh, cool. Now, we mentioned that the one in Pittsburgh, were there other cons that you were doing besides the Threeverse one that's going on this weekend when this posts? What other ones are you planning to do the rest of the year?
We're going to do Hazard Con up in Erie, and then we'll be at Steel City again in December.
Oh, do they have two?
Yeah, they do. They do three. Three? They do spring, summer, and winter.
I never heard of a convention that does three. I've seen two, but I've never seen three. So, wow. It must be pretty popular up there to be able to do three.
Well, they're the ones that usually gets the stars in. So this past one, they had William Shatner and Walter Koenig were there.
Oh, wow. Wow, William Shatner.
And I think the next one, they're doing a Goonies reunion. I think they're going to have Feldman and the guy that played Data.
Yeah, yeah. Very good, very good. Because yeah, it's a sad thing to me, though, that conventions like these, I've often asked people, you know, is it the comics that draw people or is it the media stars? And they always say 60 to 75% people say they come for the media stars. Mm. But the good news is if the convention's laid out in such a way that they have to go through the comic people to get to the media stars, right, you might be able to draw some of them and get their attention and get them reading The Edge if you could do those kinds of things.
Right. But like one of the good things about the Three Rivers Con is that it's all about comics. There's no media stars at Three Rivers Con. So it's all comics, comics, comics.
So it's like Baltimore Comic Con is that way, and I think Heroes is that way too down in North Carolina. I think those ones all, you know, I think there's a place for that because, you know, sometimes I go and I watch all the people rush to get in line to get somebody's autograph. And I was talking with Jimmy Palmiotti up at Awesome Connie. We were talking about the fact he did a post on Facebook one time where he talked about the fact that, you know, when you go to give somebody who's an established star more money, they probably are already rich and they're getting more money. If you would take that money instead of giving it to that person and giving it to a comics creator, you might get more good comics out of it.
Right.
That whole concept to me was just great, and I told him so. I said that was a great idea.
Right. I mean, it's a good idea, and that's the one thing we really like about the indie comic thing is that I'm in almost complete contact with my customers all the time. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing you miss with a Marvel or a DC or the bigger publishers is that you're not able to have a direct conversation with that creator and not even have that direct conversation with the creator. Sometimes you may be able to get that book. Sometimes you say that, hey, I love this guy when he did this. That may influence me to say, okay, well, we want to bring that guy back for a couple more issues then.
Because I remember talking to a couple of comics creators who said they didn't like to go to, like, say, New York or San Diego because there's just no time. You can't, you know, talk with anybody. The only thing you can really do is go to smaller cons or maybe like signings in small stores. And then you get a chance to talk with people about that, which they like. Because like you're saying, they get inspiration from that. They get ideas of what the fan base would like to see. And it doesn't mean you're necessarily always going to do what they suggest, but it gives you something to think about.
Right.
Because I one of my friends who's a writer always likes to say, don't give fans what they want, give them what they need, and that's a good story. Okay, so as The Edge is coming along, we're going to find out soon about number 9, which I'm looking forward to. I got to keep my ear to the ground on that one, too. You'll be at Three Rivers when this is posting on Sunday morning. So get to that convention if you're nearby and would like to go and see Marvin and get the all the good stuff going. I just think it's a great book, and I love a lot of good indie books that are just, you know, that go places I don't think I would go any other way. So I really like that. And so, Marvin, I think you're doing a great job with The Edge, and I hope you keep it up. And I hope you get to do 25-plus issues, and you get to tell all the story you want to do. Because I think it'd be a great read.
All right. Thank you.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
It's great to welcome to the podcast Zane Shenwari, the creator of a great comic series called The Elemental Balance, which I discovered at Fan Expo Dallas. How you doing, Zane?
I'm doing well, Wayne. How you doing?
Good, good. As I was just telling you before we started to record, your book was the hit of the convention for me.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, it was pretty exciting. This was my first convention, and a few people came back, and they enjoyed it as well, so it was really delightful.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Well, why don't we dive in and talk about the book? It's called
Sure.
The Elemental Balance. Why don't you describe what the book's about?
So in a nutshell, the book is basically about these four individuals from around the world who die by a natural disaster, and then they gain those powers of that element, of that disaster. They don't know why they got these powers, and they're just trying to figure out what the purpose behind that is. And so they go on this journey of figuring out their purpose. And then they realize that what happened to them wasn't an accident at all. And in fact, there's someone involved in making this happen. So that's basically the story in a nutshell. I mean, as you've read, there's a lot more that happens in the story that I can't mention because there's twists, but it's definitely a story that I would kind of classify of somewhere a mix of science fiction and mystery. Mm-hmm.
Now, I got to say, one of the things I enjoyed about the book was the fact that each chapter had a great title to go with it.
You know, that's the one of the, you know, when I was making this, I wanted to be creative in all aspects of things. And so I was curious if people would catch on to that. And so, yeah, I tried to, not only is it an idiom to the element that we're talking about, but also a foreshadowing of what's to come in the comic, you know, in general, as what a title is supposed to serve. So I just didn't want to make it a pun and make it clever, but also serve a purpose.
Now, four issues have come out, and the first one, which has to do with Earth, is called Groundbreaking News, which I loved. And the second one, which has to do with water, is called Water Under the Bridge, which I like. You can kind of tell where we're going to. And the third one, which is, you know, the air elemental, is Up in the Air. Mm-hmm. And the fourth one is called Fired Up, which I love that. I love those titles. I thought those were great titles. So where did the concept come for this? I mean, how did you come up with the idea for the elemental balance?
The concept, you know, first of all, like, I like to just keep my mind open. I don't force a story. I let it kind of come to me. And in order to do that, I really expose myself into a lot of different categories, sometimes in history, sometimes in science. Like, I watch a lot of Netflix documentaries. And this specific idea actually came from kind of a weird conspiracy theory about how somebody was comparing the four elements to the four states of matter from current science terminology. And so that kind of contrast of what we know today and what we disregard. And there's this kind of difference of, like, things that could be right in front of us, we could be blind to what it is. And so that was kind of the core of the idea. And as you've read, none of that is actually blatantly mentioned in the story, maybe like a little bit of hint, but it's just one of those driving inspirations, the idea. So that's kind of where it came from, essentially.
Well, balance, of course, is a big thing in some philosophies. Did that play into this? Why it's called elemental balance? Okay.
Yes, huge. Like, especially the yin-yang theory. You know, for those of you who are not familiar with it, is that basically that with good, evil needs to exist for that balance to happen. And so that heavily has to do with this, also mixed in with the elements. So it's different. And it also takes some of the Western philosophies and Eastern philosophies and kind of merging those two as well. So, yeah, that does have a huge aspect to it.
Mm-hmm. So it's really good. I love the storytelling. The first issue had kind of a running gag that I got a kick out of. There's a ship that's struggling under in a big typhoon or whatever it is, and all of a sudden he says, "There's no need to panic." That happens again to somebody else later down. I started to laugh because I saw, "Oh my God, he's got a running gag going here with this good
stuff." Yeah, it's really good. Well, you know, if you had noticed what that was. Is the very first scene, I don't mention blatantly who is involved in there. Mm-hmm. And so then I show a recap of what was happening. And so basically it's that same scene from the first scene, but just from different angles. Mm-hmm. So that's basically where that came from. Mm-hmm. What I like to do with stories, you know, I don't know if everybody's like this, but I've always enjoyed this when I watch movies, is when there's like time lapses where you kind of start a story somewhere in the middle and then you watch, you know, let's say if it's a TV show, you watch the first episode, then the second episode kind of backtracks a little bit to give us more information. So I like doing those little bit of time jumps, and you probably noticed some of that as well. Mm-hmm.
As I was reading, it was really good. There are so many interesting things that happened in it. I want so desperately to spoil something because there's something that in the first book, something happens that's a very important thing that has to do with the fourth book.
Yes.
All I can say is pay attention.
Yes. Okay. You know, and here's the thing. So you were one of the few people who actually read the fourth book. Hmm. And the funny thing is that people who've only read from 1 to 3 have actually not criticized, but kind of questioned what happened in book one. And I'm like, guys, just wait for it. You know, just wait for it. So it's nice that you got to see that. And here's a great thing. I wrote the entire story from the beginning to the end before I even started on the artwork, because I wanted there to be clues and hints throughout the story. So there's things that happen in chapter 2 that when you read chapter 6, you'll be wanting to read chapter 2 again. So, you know, there's different hints and clues that happen in several of these chapters that, you know, will come back.
So there's six chapters in this? How many we're going to have?
Yes. In total, there's going to be six.
Okay. Cause I was wondering about that because now I'm, of course, after having read four, I'm dying to get a hold of five.
Yeah. I broke ground on chapter five today, actually. So we start working on it.
Very good. Very good. Now, you mentioned the art. Why don't we go ahead and get into that? So the artist's name is, if I get it correctly, is Luke Horstman?
Correct.
How did you discover Luke? Was he a friend of yours? Did you meet him online? How did you discover his talent?
Well, I met him through a freelancing website. I went through People Per Hour, and I've used that before for websites. So I was like, let me see if I can find a comic book artist. And so I found Luke, and Luke had a very interesting art style, kind of cartoonish, but it was a bit different. And I was just immediately drawn to it. I like that contrast of my story, which is semi-serious tone, with his cartoonish look. And so I kind of like that contrast. And so I was like, let me just go with it. And we work well since then.
Now, does he do the color as well as the art?
Yeah, he does. He's been doing the coloring as well.
Now, one thing I noticed too is that you do lettering.
I do the lettering, yes.
You know, every time I talk to a writer who's a letterer, they always say it gives them that last second chance to alter something that they may have not have realized at the beginning. But when you're just about to go to press, you go, oops, I wanted to say something different here.
Yeah.
And you get to do that. Have you taken advantage of that?
Absolutely. You know, the way I see it is I'm revising it, you know, like that's my last revision before it goes through. Because sometimes what happens is, you know, your artist creates these panels and maybe they weren't exactly the way you want it, or maybe they were, but now the flow looks a little bit different. So it gives you an opportunity to change the text to kind of flow better, or even add some stuff that would work really well with the panels. To me, as a writer, I think my audience is actually my artist. And my artist is portraying my story to my readers. And so I convey the message to him, and then he conveys the message essentially. So basically I try to work off of what he's doing, if that makes sense.
So that sounds like sometimes he presents an idea that you might not have conceived.
Yeah.
It works because all of a sudden his take is a little different than yours and you run with that.
Exactly. And because, you know, and then also it'll be like something I write and the way I would have imagined, the way he reads it could add some extra flavor to it that I wouldn't have considered. So, and that's what's really good. Like when I would definitely encourage new writers to look for artists who've done sequential art before, because they can add that element of storytelling, of visual storytelling, that you might not be familiar with. You know, it'll give you an advantage, basically.
Mm-hmm. Which is cool. I like that kind of stuff. I like it when the creative process brings itself out, and that an artist, you know, there's always the conception that the artist only draws what the writer writes, but there is something in the way that artists can do things. They're are also storytellers.
Right, exactly.
And it works with you to make that happen. So I think that's a great thing.
Exactly.
That. Now, the interesting thing, I got to point this out too, I always get a kick. When I looked at the four issues, they're numbered with three zeros and then a number.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean you're planning to do like 1,000 of these? Is that what's happening?
No, not really. It's going to – so basically the entire stories that I have several different stories. They all are going to fall under a shared universe. So I'm going to continue these various chapters, various numbers, so you know which order to read it in. If you want to understand the entire universe, you don't have to. Like my next comic that I'm writing is called The Lost King. So The Lost King is going to start off with volume one, but you know the number is going to be seven. So that you know which sequential order to read the comics if you'd like to enjoy this the way I intended it to be. But if you just pick it up, just The Lost King, start reading that, you won't. You could still understand that story as an individual.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't we talk a little bit about the different characters? One of the characters that's pretty predominant in the first book is Chloe. Talk about who Chloe is.
Okay, Chloe is one of our main characters. She is very inquisitive. And the story starts off with just her going into a museum trying to find out about the elements. And that kind of leads us to finding out, like, you know, you're kind of curious of why she's looking into that so much. And later on, we find out that actually she's an elemental. She possesses the power of the water elements. And she's basically trying to find all the other elementals because she something happens in her past that makes her feel like it's her duty to at least know what the purpose of this is, because, you know, it could be for good, it could be for bad. But if she doesn't find out, she would never know. And so she kind of she's basically the almost the leader who's gathering everyone together to find out what's going on.
Now, she has a dream.
Yes.
And that dream is what spurs her into action.
Yes. Yep. What happens in chapter one is that her boyfriend gives her a necklace. And after she receives that necklace, that night she has a dream of a landslide that happens in Nairobi, Kenya. And so she just wakes up in the morning, thinks it's just a dream until she finds out in the news that it was actually real. And so without much thought, she just goes after that and, you know, tries to see what happens. And then when she reaches Nairobi, Kenya, it turns out that she was actually dreaming of somebody else who turns out to be, I'll leave it blank so people can read chapter one.
Right. Yeah. We don't want to spoil too much.
Don't want to spoil too much. But yeah, and actually, speaking of which, chapter one is free for anybody to read online. It's on Tapas or it's on my website as well. Definitely encourage you guys to check out at least chapter one. There's a lot of things that happen in chapter one as well. And so, yeah, I definitely encourage people to look at that.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Luckily, I was able to get all four at once. I had one experience once with a book that I went and got one, and then I went back and read it, and then I went back and got number two, and then I got all the ones that were out there. Yours was a different experience. I got to, like, binge read yours, which I appreciated because it's great stuff. I mean, you do – one of the things I enjoy, the way you do it is you forge the characters very strongly. You can tell one from the other. There are things going on, and we pay attention. You get a lot out of the story and a lot out of her. Because it looks like Chloe, for example, is a person of means, because she can hop on a plane and go to Nairobi.
Yeah, she's very decisive. She knows what she wants. And, you know, the thing with all the characters is, like, somebody's asking me, who's your favorite character? And I can, like, actually say who my favorite character is, not thinking that I wrote them. Because when I write these characters, I literally think of them as different people, like with different personality traits. So whenever I'm writing those dialogues, it's almost like I dive into like that. What would that person say? Mm-hmm. You know, like, and sometimes I kind of relate them to people that I know. So then I try to like, how would that person react or act in a certain situation? And so you'll notice, like, when you read through the story in the same situation, like, one of the characters would be like, hey, why are we even doing this? Like, you know, let's just forget about it. And she's just very headstrong. Like, no, we have to do this. You know, I owe it to myself to find out what's going on. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's different people. You know, when you think about it, not everybody's going to be on board. Not everybody's going to have the same reaction to the same thing. You know, some people might think of superpowers as a blessing, and others might think of it as a curse. Mm-hmm. And so I really wanted to portray that. I really wanted to get those characters to feel different.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I enjoyed was you went against the type of the dumb blonde with Chloe.
Yeah.
Chloe is not a dumb blonde. She's, like no. As you said, she's very inquisitive. She wants to find out things, and she's a person of action, too. She wants to get something done when it presents itself to her. And I like that about the character. I like the fact that you went a different route with her.
And you know what's going to happen also when you start reading these comics, like once you get to chapter two or chapter three, like you'll forget almost that one character is from Japan, one character is from Kenya. Like you will almost forget that aspect of things, and you'll be more focused on who they are as characters, mm-hmm. you know, and as their personality. And I don't know if I was trying to do that on purpose or anything, but that's one of the things that I really wanted was people to get engaged with the characters, you know, be focused on who they are as people, you know?
Which brings me right to my next question is, as far as diversity goes, this is a really diverse comic. in the sense that they're not. I haven't seen. Well, I don't want to say anything, but there's, you know, most comics deal with white male characters, and you start out with a female character, which I thought was great, and then we move into different types, and we don't want to spoil the stuff and say who, but let's just say if you like diversity in your comics, you're going to enjoy these books. Because I like a lot of diversity in my comics. I have read many superheroes over the day, and I've read white guys for as long as I've been alive, almost. And so for me to read this book with all the diversity, and it was really enjoyable, something, I went someplace I hadn't gone before, and that's very important to me for a variety like that. Talk about that, about bringing variety and diversity into the characters.
Absolutely. Yeah, so basically this story is a, if you think about it, as a world event, so that's kind of why I wanted to bring diversity where it actually, I mean, it actually applies. And the main thing with, you know, to me, I don't know if it's intentional or unintentional, but like I mentioned earlier, the diversity to me comes more in the character's personality, more or less than what their appearances, you know. For me, having a female character as a lead was more on the sense of the care of what a female brings to any subject, you know. The detail that they would look at, like their perspective, that's kind of where I was more focused at. And so that's kind of why I presented that. So I think it would be for both people who like diversity. I mean, you know how there's two spectrums of things that are happening right now in the comics world. I think both groups would enjoy the fact you would have one group who would enjoy the fact that it's not shoved in your face type of diversity. It works well with the story. And then the other group would be like, I enjoy the fact that there's diversity. You know, it's not pigeonholed to one, you know, one aspect of storytelling.
And I also think that elementals, the business of the elements makes you think of the world.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. That's it. And that's exactly what I want to do. Honestly, it was more so about geographic regions than anything else. So it's purposely put into, if you think about it, the characters are geographically located in different areas of the world on purpose. You know, just to give you one example without ruining anything, the fire elemental was put in Chile. And if you think about Chile, it's one of the countries that shares the most volcanoes and is by the Ring of Fire. So to put someone who has the power of fire in Chile just made sense to me. So that's kind of those things.
And I like that character too. I thought that character was a good character. Well, I like them all. They're all really interesting. Every one of them is very different from each other. Because it strikes me funny though, because, you know, relationships are often built on what you share. Mm-hmm. And yet these relationships are kind of built on what they don't share. You know, their elements are different from each other. And yet because they're elemental, that's what draws them together. So they do share that. But like water and earth, you know, the two of them are going to just make mud, you know, if something was to happen with that. So there's good and bad involved with all these interactions.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, some of this also kind of has to do with their personalities as well. You know, I kind of dove into that too. Like their element needs to kind of also have something to do with, for example, the fire elemental. You know, when we read chapter 4, one of the things that you'll realize is that the fire elemental, she has this very conflicting views at some point, because she's always seen herself as good. And now that she has powers of fire, people are judging her. And now it'll be interesting for us to find out in chapter 5, what happens to, does she take up on that judgment of her being classified as basically, you know, in there, they call her Diablo, you know, the devil. Oh, yeah. So does she take on that persona, or does she maintain of who she thought she was initially? So that's going to be something that's going to be very interesting, because, you know, when I think about fire also, it's very complex. And I mentioned that in the comic as well, that, you know, fire was, you know, is represented as the devil, you know, but it's also been the survival for man, you know? So so fire in itself is a very conflicting, element in that nature. Mm-hmm. So what, and you know, this is the thing that my readers are going to like see when they read this is when they first pick it up, they might compare it to Avatar the Airbender, right? Mm. Or they'll compare it to some other thing that they've read with the elements. But in reality, the elements are more or less an excuse. The main thing is basically we're going to find out about relationships and how that, you know, personalities and those more intangible things and how that relates to their superpowers, mm-hmm. and what it does to their powers. Because there's a lot more to tell. You know, this is just, I mean, we're just scratching the surface.
Because I don't want to spoil anything, but let's just say there's a big, big surprise.
Yeah.
Somewhere down the line. I'm not going to say when or where or what it's about because it just was a big surprise to me. Now, in the first issue, we see Chloe, you know, she gets in and interacts with the Earth Elemental. But issue two, you actually go back and talk about her origin story a little more, about where she came from and how this happened.
Right.
And I really like that because I like a story, and this is the Howie Chaykin way of writing sometimes I think of it. Because what he would do is he'd drop you in the middle of a circumstance and you had to kind of figure out what's going on along the way. You helped us along the way with issue two by giving us a little more information about her. And I liked that a lot. I thought that was a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to give justice to, you know, pretty much all the characters and still make the story flow, not to feel like, you know, one of the things I really wanted to avoid, I knew I was going to make it like chapter one, you know, talk about Earth Elemental, Water Elemental, but I didn't want it to feel very like repetitive, mm-hmm. that here's, you know, here's his story, her story, you know, kind of, I wanted to make it flow in a story format, like it's sequentially heading somewhere, mm-hmm. and then still introduce the characters and give them justice. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of where my focus was at.
Because that's one of the things I like, too, about the fact that you started out with the Earth one, yet the Water Elemental was highly involved with this.
Yeah.
It wasn't only the Earth Elemental.
Yeah, exactly. She was kind of the primary. And throughout the story, she is the primary person in, you know, except for Chapter 4 where that changes a bit. But up until, like, you know, that point, she's the primary one. And then we introduce, you know, even though chapter one had her a lot in there, we're still introducing the Earth Elemental. Like things that are happening to her are about the Earth Elemental. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to do something different, you know, taking those risks, because I have, you know, I wrote this in, you know, by myself, not knowing how people would react to it. Mm-hmm. And so I took risks, you know, writing this story. Mm-hmm. And so it's rewarding to hear that when people enjoy and pick out these little small details that I put into the story.
Well, let me point out another detail that I thought was really interesting in the masthead. The masthead, the words, the elemental balance, change every issue. The words stay the same, but the masthead recognizes which elemental we're talking about in that issue.
Right, exactly.
The first issue was sort of a groundish kind of a thing. It's like dirt or underneath the dirt kind of stuff. Second one has to do with water. There's water parts of it. And following that, you get the sense of what's going to happen in the next two, which is really good. And there's all these little things that tell me that you thought this out.
Yes.
Which I enjoy because, so often when you get a masthead in a comic, it's always that way. It's never going to change from issue to issue. But you're making every issue fun. If we pay attention, we're going to get good results from all of it. I really like that a lot. I thought that was really a great idea.
Yeah, and that's kind of the point. Like, I want people to enjoy it. And because it's a comic book, right, and you know, if you're watching a movie, whenever a scene passes by, it already passed by. But with a comic book, you can flip through pages and go back, and it's in your hand. So, to give it justice, it needs to have multiple purposes. You can read it once and you find one detail. You read it again, you find another detail. You know, that's what I wanted to do. To have a little puzzles in there, have a little hints. You know, there's a lot of things in there that you'll start realizing when you start reading the other chapters. So
yeah, I someday we'll have to come back and talk about those other chapters. I don't want to spoil stuff, but I do have to say that I loved all four chapters.
Thank you so much.
For that. When I got to number four, you mentioned to me that I was one of the first, if not the first person to read chapter four. And I was just blown away. I loved chapter four because there's, let's just say, things happen in there that I didn't expect. And like I said, pay attention to what's going on because you're going to be really interested when things, certain things start to unfold before right. you. Because I was blown away by it. I really love those kinds of things. I like it when, because I paid attention, I saw, oh, this is this. And wait a minute, this is happening here. Why is that happening? And then we find out why. And yikes.
Yeah. Chapter four was I was kind of worried about chapter four just because it leaves off with, you know, the audience just wanting more. And I wasn't sure if that was, you know, going to agitate people or if they're going to be satisfied with the reveal. And so that was one of those kind of worrisome things. So when I talked to you and I had a few other people came by, I was like, oh, yes. Okay, it worked. What I'm doing is working. So I felt kind of relieved about that.
Well, that's kind of the way storytelling has evolved into these days. We don't want to necessarily have all the elements, be funny here, laid out for us. You know, we want to have things that as we go, we continue to learn and continue to enjoy what's going on. And that's the way your book is. It reveals things that we need to know to move forward with it. And I love that stuff. This just feels like a TV show to me. This could very easily be like an animated series or something, especially with special effects these days. I think this could be I could see this on Netflix really easily.
And, you know, in fact, this was actually written as a novel initially. So there's a lot of detail that I had to take out just because, you know, I didn't want the comic to just feel too mundane. So if it does ever become a TV show, there's a lot more detail to this story that could be actually presented. So I've kind of thought of all those things. You know, for the main story standpoint, you know, it's in the comic book. But there's a lot of stuff that could have still be talked about, more of the science of it, how things are happening. There's more details to it, actually.
Have you thought about doing like a mini series to present those details, maybe?
Well, I have. Like as a mini series, like a comic book mini series. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have actually. So there's something that happens at the very end of chapter six. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a very slight cliffhanger just to allow people to know that we will continue these stories, mm-hmm. but it's not going to be annoying enough to where you're going to be like, well, now what happens? You know, I'm going to give it an ending and then give a little bit extra to let the audience know that this story will continue. And so those are going to contribute towards a little mini series of going a little bit more into each character's detail, kind of talking a little bit more about some of the concepts. So yeah, I actually have thought about some of those aspects of it.
Because see, I was there at the convention and I had limited space that I could pick up stuff to take back with me. But yours was the book that broke the dike on that one. I had to have that, and so I bought the physical issues to pack with me so I could make sure I brought them back.
I did not expect that. When you came by, like, I have to have them.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I was so fascinated by them. Now, we've talked about the book, and I highly recommend the book, by the way. If you're interested in what we've talked about, this is a book I think you will enjoy. Tell people how you can get the book.
Okay, so right now we have this book on Kickstarter. I just launched it today. So check us out on Kickstarter. Look for The Elemental Balance. And, you know, please support us, pledge us. You can get all four issues. We also have a lot of merchandise that go along with what's happening. There's the necklace that I was talking about earlier. We actually manufactured that necklace as well. So just some cool things to be able to, like, you can see it in a comic and then you can touch it as well. So we have that all on Kickstarter. And if you want things more immediate, we also are keeping our Indiegogo in demand up for a little while. So if you want it sooner than later, then I'll definitely recommend jumping on that.
Now, you used Kickstarter in the past, haven't you, to fund these things?
Yes, I have.
Because I was just looking out on Kickstarter, and I see you had chapter one, then you had one, two, and three, and then number four.
Yeah, I actually had two failed campaigns, two or three failed campaigns.
What did you learn from those? I mean, sometimes a failed one is better than one that is successful because you learn stuff from it.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, it really, you know, when you create something, you think it's really good, but you know, that's just only half the battle or maybe less. The biggest battle is finding readers. And so I just really focused on, and unfortunately I had to spend maybe like 80% of my time of trying to find readers. So I've been just reaching out to people and talking and having one-on-one conversation. Pretty much any backer that I have a personal relationship with. You know, I know them, I've had a conversation with them, you know, so that's kind of where it's at. So that's been kind of most of the battle right now, is been trying to find readers. But, you know, the good thing is that when those readers read it, they've enjoyed it enough to share it on their social platforms. And so hopefully, you know, that can start multiplying to where more and more people can read it.
Because I'm looking at them right now. It's under the Elemental Balance, and it's for Chapter 4, Fired Up, is correct, where this is going. And I'm looking at the different things. I haven't done this before. What I'm going to do, I'm going to sign up for this right now while I'm talking with you. I'm going to go ahead and go for the chapters 1 through 4 physicals. You've got some extra things with it. The bookmark, wristband, bookmark, another bookmark, the fire one, the one's the earth, the one I mentioned before, and print versions. I'll go ahead and sign up for that. And we'll put that on there. So I'll add a little to your you're just getting started, so it's a little low. But why don't you tell people how much you're asking for, what your goal is?
So the goal is $1,000. The goal is not necessary to reach any kind of cost aspect of it. Mainly it's for printing, to offset printing. And my main objective is to get as many readers. I want more people to read it. And that's just kind of been what's been the focus.
Okay.
So that's kept a local goal.
So according to this, you've got until Saturday, July 6th at 6:09 in the evening Eastern Time to sign up. And I think $1,000 is eminently reachable. You learned a lot. Now you know what you're doing when you do these good things. So I've added my pledge to it. And there's lots of good, interesting pledges to levels that I like real well. And you've got some samples of the artwork on there. And it's all good stuff. I really, really like it. And so I'm highly encouraged. I think you're going to make sure and get this done, because we really want to make sure these books happen, because you've got a great story all figured out, and you're moving forward with a really strong bit of storytelling. And, God, I'd like to see more of this. I can't wait for number 5. I wish it was number 5. I'd be ready to back that one up right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm working on it. See, the thing is that I don't want to post a campaign for something that's not fully completed. So I've tried to like have it about at least 80% done before I put a campaign out, just for my peace of mind. So because my biggest, like, there's a story element to things, but then there's also a business element to things. So I want people, if I make a promise, I want to make sure I keep it. So that's been my focus. So that's why I haven't posted Chapter 5 yet. But once we get 80%, and you know, with all the positive feedback that I've been getting, I'm gonna try to amp up this. But you know, it does cost a lot of money to make these comics, and so far a lot of it has been just out of my pocket. So these things definitely do help in making me expedite the production of the next issues. But I'll tell you this, however way the campaigns come out, you know, profit, no profit, I will finish the series. Even if it's out of my own pocket, but I have to do it for my readers.
Well, I think you're going to have a lot of people want to jump on board and help you with this, because it's a really great book. Really good stuff. I have to get it. I was just looking at the series bookmark. And if you look at it, you might see something that's important for the story. More than that, I won't say. But if you go to Kickstarter and you look under the Elemental Balance, and Chapter 4 is abbreviated, CH4 Fired Up. And be sure to get in there and do, because I've already pledged, and I want you guys to go out and do that as well, because I think you're going to really enjoy it. It's really a great comic. I love it. So even of the necklace, you can buy a copy of the necklace. that she gets in the first issue, which I really like. Before we get, I've got a couple other questions, but I want to talk about Game Plan. Mm-hmm. Talk about what Game Plan is about, because you had a banner there for that at the convention as well. What is Game Plan?
So Game Plan, from a story standpoint, is basically this star athlete football player who his life in the surface like looks like it's perfect. Everyone really admires him, but he seems very like standoffish, very like he thinks like he's above people. And so there's this girl who comes from India. She's very positive, jolly, and kind of a little naive. And she gets interested in this guy. But everyone's like, don't waste your time with him. He thinks he's above everybody. And she's just very curious about who he is. And she starts looking into him and finding out more about him. And turns out that he actually is dealing with some demons from his past. He's had a very tragic history. And football means something, you know, to everybody else, football means something very positive. But to him, it's almost something very dark. And so the story, you know, if you've like, I know when you've seen the poster, it's divided in two parts. There's a dark stadium. It's a dark football stadium. And then there's a very bright, like Taj Mahal, like India. Mm-hmm. And basically it's, the story is essentially this girl trying to find out, like when she finds out that he has this dark past, she's trying to bring him back into the light and try to make him, you know, see the positive in the world. But she kind of finds herself wandering in his darkness. And so it's this interesting struggle. It's a little bit of a romantic tragedy type story. And we get to see as just as, you know, readers and people that, you know, we go through things in our lives. And sometimes we think that this is it, you know, that, you know, it can never get better. But it's the people around us that help us get through it. And I think it's a story with a lot of positive message. I wrote this story actually for my wife. You know, at the time she was my wife and she was just so impressed by it. She cries every time when she reads the story. But it's not a typical comic book story. It's not science. It is fiction, but it doesn't have the hero element to it. As far as like superpowers and whatnot, mm-hmm. It's just a different aspect of storytelling. But I think people are just going to love it because the storytelling has two different tones to it. I mean, you know, the first half you read it, it's very jolly, very happy, it's funny. And then the second half, or like a little bit somewhere towards the middle, it gets very gloomy. And then we kind of fall to where it gets into a very positive, you know, ending. And by the way, I don't like to leave tragic endings, just so you know. I like to keep things on a happy note. So don't be worried. You won't end off with like being sad. Mm-hmm. So well, that's kind of a nutshell.
I don't mind a sad ending sometimes. I don't always want a cheerful ending. So,
fair enough.
You know, but your stories are great fun. Now, does this happen in the same universe as Elemental Balance?
No, actually, this story and I have another story. Those two stories don't happen in the same world, same universe, just because of the nature of the story of itself. They're just way too independent. The rules of the world are different in each of the stories. So what I did was the logos for my stories that are in the same universe are under Inzane Comics. Mm-hmm. And then the stories that are more like drama, thriller type base. They're going to be under Inzane Chrome. They're just more realistic type stories that you could imagine that would happen in the real world. So I kind of differentiate the two. Mm-hmm.
So if we want to get the books, we can go to the Kickstarter and do it, and we can also go to Indiegogo.
Correct.
And get the books that way. And Game Plan is coming. Do you know when that's going to start yet? Are you going to Kickstarter that one too?
Absolutely. I'm going to try to Kickstarter once we have, you know, like about 80% of it done. I've already had three pages completed. To be honest with you, my main goal is to try to present this story to Image Comics or Dark Horse, see if they like it. I personally think this story is going to be something that they will really enjoy if they actually take the time to read it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm working right now on all the application process and creating a summary and doing everything that's required in the application. So hopefully I can get this into Image Comics. And by doing so, you know, maybe that popularity can also, you know, reflect on the Elemental Balance as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, possibly maybe get that into Image Comics or keep it in Inzane Comics. My main goal is to just get my stories out to the readers because I've really enjoy. I really believe in these stories, and I just want people to enjoy it.
Yeah, well, it's good stuff. Is it the same artist on Game Plan?
No, I'm going to use different artists for each story, just to give opportunities for other artists to present their work. I don't go with artists that have a huge following. I want to give opportunities to artists that are good, that are very professional, and kind of bring them into different to different mediums to hopefully kind of expand their business as well. Okay. If you know, because if while I'm here, I want to be able to give opportunities to other people too. I'm a big supporter of artists, and you know, it's one of those things that it's not a very appreciated, you know, talent. So I want to do my part in trying to bring it out to people. Okay.
Because, you know, there's some folks who like artists who get paid when they sell the books rather than you giving them some kind of salary or something. Do you have a thing that you do with the artist that helps them with that?
No, because so far any of the artists that I've dealt with prefer to get paid up front. And I don't blame them because, you know, to say for them to think that, like, because, you know, at the end of the day, I'm an indie creator, and, you know, the way the comic industry is, I don't blame my artists because they know where it's going to go. Mm-hmm. So they would probably prefer to get paid up front, and that's fine with me. You know, I understand that they spend the time and hours, so that's absolutely fine with me. So that's kind of how I have it set. Maybe going down the road in the future, they start seeing that there's some kind of traction to what I'm creating, you know, maybe we'll get into something like that.
That's cool, because I know some people who want artists to like get their exposure by doing it, but not necessarily get paid for it. But I don't know how somebody can survive on that. Is
it okay? No, it's to me, I mean, to each their own, but I feel like that's a bit of an unfair expectation. You know, that at the end of the day, they're still going to put their heart out there. They still want to do good work to represent themselves, you know, but, and a lot of times they don't get compensated. Like, you know, if you were to divide their hours up, they're not even getting paid, you know, minimum wage, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but you know, we all have to kind of do our own part trying to help this, you know, this, industry. I really do believe there's a lot of potential, even in the indie comic market, as you know, as a whole. I think we're heading towards something different, something major. I think indie comics are going to be the next thing. I'm noticing more and more people that are diving into indie comics, so I'm actually very excited about the future for this.
Well, it's good storytelling, and you know, you're right in the sense that, like, if you wanted to go to DC or Marvel, they probably wouldn't go for the stuff that you're doing.
Yeah,
Image is possible, but you know, a lot of people, the reason why you make your comics is you've got this great story you want to tell, and the best way to do it is through an independent comic, which is what you're doing. You're doing a great job of it, I have to say. Those four issues have been great. How long have you been working on Elemental Balance?
So I was, so it's been 2 years in total, but the first year was, or the year and a half, I was actually in corporate America, mm-hmm. working full-time and then trying to get this completed. And it was taking too long. I mean, the first issue probably took about close to a year to make. And so I just had to make a choice. My wife was a big supporter. She's like, you enjoy this. She really believed in me. She was the one who believed in me before I believed in myself, you know? Wow. So she was like, you know what? I'm going to take up on work and you do work on this full time. So she took a job and I put in my resignation. It was a scary thing to do, but then I was able to finish each chapter much quicker because I could put my full time towards it. Wow. And so then that other year I was able to make the other three issues, and hopefully like I can make that more quicker. That's cool. I can have some quicker turnarounds.
Well, I give her a big thank you from the rest of us, because we got to read the books because of her commitment to it. And I think it's just wonderful. It's really great.
Thank you. I'll let her know.
Okay. Because now I want to talk about one other thing that I get a kick of. The name of your company. It's called InZane Comics. And, of course, your name is Zane, but your name isn't spelled the way it is in the name of the company. It's right. Z-A-I-N. And the name of the company is I-N-Z-A-N-E, kind of like right. The word insane.
Yes.
And you've changed the S to a Z. Did you design the logo for it? Because it's a really interesting graphic.
Yeah, I did, actually.
Because it's got an I laying down, then it's got like an N, and if you turn, then you turn it sideways, and the N becomes a Z-A-N-E. On the
yes, you notice that. Yeah. Yes. I never knew if people would notice that.
Yeah, it's really great, very artsy. I like the fact of that. And then you've got a graphic of, I don't know what that is. It's a somebody either laughing or something with the letter Z on the side of their head.
So it's like a crazy, you know, laugh from this monsterish type of character. So basically what that is when I was a kid, when I was 10 years old, I was told to come up with a professional signature that was meaningful. Mm-hmm. And so at the time, I loved drawing. I loved comic books. So I always thought that I was going to be like an artist and I was going to be signing something. So I want something to have like an art element to it. Mm-hmm. So if you look at my logo, kind of where the eye is, you know, where the eyes of the monster are, it's a little loop. It's a Z. Mm-hmm. And then where the jaw is the S.
Oh.
So if you see, that was my signature. So I would put, you know, Zane with a little, you know, circle around it and make a little jaw. And I made my signature into a cartoon monster. So the funny thing is when I was working in corporate America, you know, different things led to me leaving. Mm-hmm. One of them was that we went through four rounds of layoffs and just, it was kind of a tough time in the industry. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there signing a professional contract with this monster signature. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so one of my customers asked me, what is this? It's kind of funny looking. And then, you know, it was one of those things like, yeah, I made this when I was a kid. I just never changed it. It's not even on my mortgage papers. And then, you know, that kind of just led to one of those things that kind of stuck with my head. So when I left, when I was thinking about the logo, I was like, you know, why not honor that childhood, you know, dream that I had, with what I'm doing now. And so I put that as my logo.
Cool. Well, it's really great. I like the look of it. I have to say, when I don't put my initials, when they say initial something, I squish the letters of my name together, and the E is just like your E. I put an E on the end of it like that, with three lines instead of a letter E, and stuff like that. So I do something similar. That's why I was drawn to it, I think, because it looks something like I could relate to. So I really like that. That's really good. Well, you know, Zane, I think you're doing wonderful stuff. I think it's just great. I want to see more of it, and I want to see a lot more as it comes in the future. I want to get to the sixth issue and then see what else you've got in mind. Because if you've got other stories that are as good as Elemental Balance coming, boy, I can't wait to read them.
I'll tell you this. Elemental Balance is probably not the best that I have.
Now I got to really see them.
The Lost King, I am geeking out about it. Wow. I mean, it's going to be, especially if you have a Game of Thrones fever, like, you know, that it's going away and you want something to fill in that void. Mm-hmm. This is going to be it. Lost King is just so cool. The things that I'm going to show in there, you've just never heard of. I got Humanimal Instinct. That's going to be super cool. I got a lot of cool stories coming up. It's weird. This is the weird fun thing about what I'm doing. I get excited about what I'm writing. And so that's one of the most joys of everything.
Which leads to a question. If we want to keep up with what you're doing, you know, you've got your website, inzanecomics.com, but are you on social media as well?
Yes. You can search me pretty much on any social media site. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Just look for Inzane Comics, and you will find that goofy monster look. That's my logo. You can add me. Best way to do it, I would say, is to subscribe to my mailing list through my website. I don't spam. I just send emails out whenever a major release is out, so that you'll be able to stay up to date with whenever the next issue is out, whatever we're working on, you'll know about it.
Great, because I'm going to have to make sure I'm signed up for that, because I want to keep up with your stuff, because it's really great. So, you know, Zane, keep it up. All I can say is keep doing it. I've already pledged to your Kickstarter, and I hope that you get your goal pretty quickly and get on to stretch goals and good things like that. So it's great. The Elemental Balance and other good things to come, such as your game plan. So I think, God, I can't wait to see what you're going to do.
Me too. I'm excited. I'm excited about the future. It's going to be a lot of fun.
That's it for this week. Be back next episode when I'll have another terrific conversation with another wonderful comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.